Welcome to the Legally Speaking Podcast. You are now listening to season 7 of the show. I'm your host, Rob Hanna. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Sabina Perus. Sabina is a senior solicitor in clinical negligence at Thompson Solicitors. Sabina has a wealth of experience specializing in injury and litigation, as well as clinical negligence and complex injuries. Sabina is also the director of the Sky Project, a registered charity working towards reduced forced marriages in Bristol and nationwide. Sabina's work has been described as cutting edge, winning Bristol Law Society Pro Bono Lawyer of the Year in 2016. She was a finalist at the National Next 100 Years Inspirational Women in Law Awards 2020 and was awarded a True Honor Award by in 2022. Earlier in 2023, Sabina was recognized as the legal hero by the Law Society of England and Wales. So a very big warm welcome, Sabina.
Hi, hello. Thank you for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And before we dive into all your amazing projects and experiences to date, we have a customary opening question on the Legally Speaking podcast, which is, on the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being very real, what would you rate the hit TV series Suits in terms of its reality of the law if you've seen it?
I have seen it and I've watched it all. And I would probably say I would give it about a 2.5, possibly.
Well, that's a very precise score. With that, we're going to move swiftly on to talk about all about your journey. So to begin with, Sabina, would you mind telling our listeners a bit about your background and career journey?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose I've followed a little bit of a traditional route and realised that I wanted to do law around the age of about 16, got some work experience in a criminal firm, which I thought was really fascinating and exciting, actually. And then from there, I went to university. I did a dual honours in law and sociology and social anthropology. It's a long one to say. I felt that I could law on its own, really. I felt that it would be better to balance it out. And that's always been a thing for me. I've always felt that I've needed to do two different parts so that it balances my mind, and I feel passionate about both areas. And after that, I did my postgraduate and then looked for that all elusive training contract. It was a horrendous experience, but you just have to fight the fight.
You do. And there's a message in that, you know, you have to be persistent because, you know, it is competitive to get into the law. Obviously, with the SQE and other things that have come in, you know, hopefully trying to make it more accessible. But mindset and that persistence is very important. So thanks for sharing that. I want to talk more about your motivations for pursuing a path of clinical negligence. Can you tell us more about the why?
Yeah, I suppose I did a human biology for A-levels, and I knew that I was very interested in the science side of things, particularly sort of the human body side of things, but I was never clever enough to do, I think, medicine. So although I was really excited about it, I knew that it's not something that I could follow on career-wise. And the two seemed to go really well together. Obviously, with clinical negligence, you need to have that extra knowledge and science. And sometimes you even become a little bit of an expert yourself because you're trying to find the holes and within an expert report and try to understand it. So the science aspect I really enjoy, and that actually is a huge part in clinical negligence work.
Yeah, no, and it sounds fascinating, some of the cases and the work that you're involved with. But can you sort of walk us through a typical day in the life? To understand, you're a senior solicitor in clinical negligence at Thompson Solicitors. So just walk us through what a typical day looks like for you.
The days can be a bit varied.
Yeah.
And certainly it's not like how Suits might portray a day of excitement. There are a lot of times where you are sat at your desk and looking through numerous medical records and just engaged with trying to find out information from there. And there are other days where we are client visiting, we have court hearings, and we are preparing for more serious aspects such as trials, etc., and conferences with barristers. So it is very varied, but there is a lot of detail involved, and there can be days, and sometimes it takes me, you know, days to look through medical records. So I could be sat all week just looking through someone's medical records. So but it is, I love the science aspect. I love the client care aspect. I'm dealing with a lot of mesh clients who unfortunately had mesh inserted by a surgeon who is also quite prominent in the news at the moment. But it is, I feel that I'm, you know, acting for all these women, and it really aligns with my feminist kind of thoughts as well. So yes, we feel that we're doing something for them and to ensure that they get the justice, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking of justice, you know, Thompson's is a leading social justice law firm fighting for the rights of the injured and mistreated for 100 years. What do you most enjoy about being part of the firm?
I think the certainly the solicitors you notice are different. They have a different approach to things. It's very open door policy. You don't really notice who's a partner and who's not sometimes because of their ethos. And they have a real, they're very positive on, and they seem to push through client care. Client care is probably one of their biggest things because they care, and they will take things further if they need to, and they will fight for you. And that fight has always been inside me. So it aligns with me, I think, because I will, you know, however long it takes, I will fight for that person, and the firm aligns with what I think as well, which is great.
I love that tenacity. I love your core values. And, you know, Jack Newton, the CEO of Clio, who's our, you know, the sponsor of our show, talked very openly in his book about being the client-centered law firm, you know, being that really client-centric. And you've given a great example there. I mean, you have some wonderful experience in injury and litigation. What have been some of your most memorable cases? Is there one in particular which has had a significant impact on your own career?
I suppose so. I mean, I settled one of the biggest cases that I have done this year, and that was over $1 million. And it was quite an emotional moment. So when we actually settled, it was emotional for all the parties involved. You do share their journey, your journey, you go through them. This cases can go on for years, and you're with them every step of the way, and it's a little bit like family. You become family to them. They're picking up the phone and telling you what their day's been like and the difficulties that they've had. And it was quite an emotional experience for all of us, really, and the most complex case that I've had to deal with, because there were seven reports from my side and the defendants, and it was a really complex area, which the barrister also indicated also. So it was an amazing achievement to settle it, but also to settle it with the client being extremely happy and also so grateful. She knew that I'd done everything I can, and that's so satisfying when you're doing this job, and that's why I love it.
Yeah, it's that, it's the not intangible, isn't it? That internal satisfaction that you get when you're passionate about what you do in your job and you're making a real impact on people's lives for good. Through your profession. And congratulations, that's a fantastic success story you've shared there. You've sort of touched on it, but just digging a little bit deeper, how do you and your team approach these cases with that real empathy and sensitivity? Because as you've touched on, you've probably dealt with some really intricate, delicate cases.
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, and I can't vouch for everybody here, but I try and see it from the client's perspective and the difficulties that they have, and taking a very small part of my life where I ruptured my Achilles tendon and it was horrendous. And I had, I was breastfeeding at the time.
Oh, wow.
And it was just an awful time in my life where I couldn't do anything. And it made me realise, you know, when you see it from their perspective and the difficulties it face, and you put yourself in their shoes, however difficult it may be, you understand them a bit more. These are emotional clients as well. They will have good days, they will have bad days, and those bad days they might be speaking to you, but you just have to understand it from their perspective about the frustrations. And certainly even when I ruptured my Achilles, my husband probably got the most of it, but there was frustration. So it's really trying to understand it from their perspective.
And that's really good advice that you shared there. And sorry to hear you, Paul, you ruptured your Achilles. I think the worst I've done is a broken nose in rugby and a pulled hamstring, which was very, very bad, actually. That was, I think, a tear three. So I was, limping around a little bit for a little while from that. But you is a really good message there about seeing it from that, being in their shoes. I remember I was at a keynote conference last year at ClioCon where Chris Voss, who was a former FBI hostage negotiator, was talking about, the way to negotiate or engage with these people is it's not about you. And you've mentioned it there. It's not about you. It's putting yourself in their shoes, understanding what they're coming from, and to actually build that relationship and to maybe get where you want the relationship to go. You've got to really think from that mindset rather than this is my job, I want it to go that way. Well, not every case is going to be the same. Not every scenario is going to be the same. It may be the same injury, but it might be from a different circumstance. So really understanding and not sort of assuming, I think, is really invaluable advice. So thanks for sharing that. So you've also had the opportunity to deal with cases going to the High Court. How does it feel to be representing clients at the higher stage?
I mean, it is a very surreal moment when you're walking through those doors and it amazing building, and you just feel so small when you walk in there. But actually, with that aside, when I felt slightly overwhelmed when I was going into the High Court, it really is about seeking justice. And however grand the buildings are and however small the buildings are, without any facilities, which I've certainly been to courts where they don't have very good facilities at all because of the funding cuts that we have, you realise you are there for the client. And it's just about seeking justice from the best. When it goes to the high court, you know that you're faced with the judges there who have got extreme experience, but ultimately it is about seeking justice for the client, and that's how I always look at it.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love your values, your approach to the profession, and it's everything that we absolutely support here on the Legally Speaking podcast. I want to sort of look forward now. We've talked a lot about obviously your journey, but how do you see the legal landscape evolving, particularly in the areas like clinical negligence? Are there any emerging trends you believe that are going to shape the future of your profession?
There's always been concerns with personal injury work, with the fixed cost regimes and the more fixed costs coming in. It is always a concern about ensuring that there are justice is there for the clients, because without money, without the fees that we pay for solicitors who do have expertise, and they take years to gain this experience and knowledge, they may not get what they are entitled to. And that is the difficulty here. And it's always been a worry in the profession. I've certainly worked at firms where we've had to deal with redundancies, etc., as a result. So it's a little bit of a worrying time, but I've been through worrying times, and you hope that things will get better, or you have to change and adapt with the times. And that's another thing that you realise over time when you've been working at other firms where they have suffered losses as a result, that you have to adapt and change your ways of working.
Yeah, I always say, the only constant in business is change. And I think you need to be able to embrace that change and evolve with the time. So it's very poignant of you to highlight that. Okay, I want to talk more about your wider work, which is really highly regarded within the legal and wider community, because you're the director and trustee of the Sky Project. For those that are not familiar, can you tell us about the charity and what it's all about?
Yeah, so we are a Bristol-based charity that raises awareness on forced marriage and honour-based abuse. What we do is deliver accredited training locally and nationwide on this issue, which is an issue that people don't really understand still. And training, we emphasise, is absolutely key to helping victims, helping those survivors that need assistance, and really understanding, not really relying on media all the time, because it is portrayed incorrectly a lot of the time, particularly the issue of forced marriage and arranged marriage. So that's what we're here for. I've been doing it for quite a long time now, I've realised. So, because we set up around 2009. So it's been a long road, and it's nice to get acknowledged for the work that we do. But there's obviously so much more that we need to be doing. But we try to do that within our working as well. So it's time that's always an issue. But we are incredibly passionate about the work that we do. And when we do realise we've done such great work is when we hear responses of people saying that they've saved lives as a result.
Yeah, no, and you've done a tremendous job, it has to be said. And you're just putting one foot in front of the other. As you say, there's always more to do, but you're taking those steps forwards to taking action. And
time for a short break from the show. Calling all lawyers who want to work smarter, not harder. Are you tired of following old processes just because? Or do you feel like your current setup is letting you down? Then I recommend you try Clio, the legal software that streamlines your workflow and keeps your entire firm organized. With Clio's cloud-based legal software, you can quickly and easily manage your cases, billing, documents, and calendar all from one place. They've even got an easy-to-use mobile app, so you can stay on top of your cases wherever you go. Join the tens of thousands of legal professionals worldwide who trust Clio for all of their legal needs. It's the legal software that works for the modern law firm. Dive in, start using it right away with their 7-day free trial. Sign up now at clio.com/legally speaking. That's clio.com/legally speaking. Now back to the show.
I want to dive a little bit deeper because the Sky Project, I believe, has three key aims. One is to educate and raise awareness, provide training and create support services. So would you mind explaining these key aims in more detail for us?
Yeah, so the educate and raise awareness is really, again, what I've said like a little bit before, is that training is the key part. So whichever organisation you work for. And when I did a summer campaign, I invited everyone. I said, here's a summer campaign. I'm delivering this training on forced marital and abuse. When I started that summer campaign, I had no idea about all the different people that ended up coming, and they came from all different organisations. And we're talking not just it was police, teachers, safeguarding, housing, universities, health. It was across the board, so it's very multi-agency wide. And it's interesting to hear their stories about why they feel that they need this training, either that they know somebody through even a work environment or somebody through their work that they are helping and trying to help. So it was across the board, we need that training. The multi-agency side of things is because I currently chair also the Forced Marriage Working Group. So we then work together. Groups from different organisations attend this multi-agency group, and we try and work together to prevent forced marriage and non-abuse abuse within the Southwest area. Now, that group is currently looking to be mixed with another group, so it comes within a broader area, and we can do more to combat this issue.
Yeah, and it's tremendous that the work that's being put in, and of course, you know, I mentioned the introduction that you've been recognised as a legal hero by the Law Society of England and Wales, which is absolutely deserved. But with the Sky Project, you were also finalist for the Bristol Life Awards and the Great British Business and Community Awards in 2022. So can you tell us about the initiatives and the charity that has worked on?
So, yeah, so that was a bit of a strange situation, because between all of us in the group, we have delivered to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and over thousands of people. Interestingly, over COVID, it actually helped our project significantly, because what we were doing is online training, which allowed people to connect from all over the country. And that significantly increased our numbers of training. And what I couldn't believe is that we were getting people from all across the country, even as far as Manchester, Leeds, all those areas. And I was quite surprised at that, because I know that there are charities, or as far as I understand is, there are charities that deal with this area in the north. I think how we stand out is that we focus on training. We focus on training and education. We can't do the we don't support survivors in that sense, but we are as a hands-on approach. But we do provide that education and training. We put in effort and accreditation and get that accreditation, because we've finalised that training package to make sure that it covers all bases for people to leave and feel confident to either support somebody or raise the issue that they need to raise. I mean, we've had people come on to say that, no, now I feel confident to tell my manager that what they're saying is incorrect. You know, this is a criminal offence and we can act. And that is really great, because we've given that package and we can deliver it in an hour. People can fit it in their day, and they can walk away feeling confident about how to help someone and save a life.
Yeah, and it's such, you know, important work. And, you know, I just want to again, you know, thank you and all involved, because I think it's fantastic. You briefly mentioned being the chair of the Forced Marriage Working Group based in Bristol. You know, again, just going into more detail, what type of work does the group
do? So what we do is we share information. So there's a lot of information, for example, that the police may have obtained that we are not aware of. And that information is then shared, statistics, for example, and then we liaise with one another. Now, sometimes those can be difficult conversations as well. So there might be, we've also had survivors that have been part of the group and those who have helped survivors. And they are passionate about the concerns that potentially conflict with what the police have as well. Now, we all have a difficult job to do, but what is important that regardless of these difficulties and barriers, that we come together and try and prevent things from happening, because ultimately what we want to do, what the Sky Project wants to do, is prevent these forced marriages and honour-based abuse from happening. We know the extent of what can happen when somebody is a victim of a forced marriage, or the outcomes of that, and they can be incredibly severe, leading to potential honour-based killings. So the aim of this group is really to make sure that we work together and are not so divisive, and try and work together to combat this issue. We even have people from the Gypsy community, a representative from that community come, because again, that's a huge issue within the Southwest area. So it is important that we don't pigeonhole groups. We keep it open for all, and we share that information together.
Yeah, no, I love that. I'm sort of getting collaboration, openness, you know, solution focused. Yeah, absolutely. And again, thank you for this, you know, really important work that you're doing. To help educate some of our listeners as well, what are some of the misconceptions or myths around forced marriages you would like to?
So what we tend to touch on is the issue that forced marriage and arranged marriage are not the same. And many people think that they are. Arranged marriages have been happening for a very long time. The issue is really about consent of both parties. And what we tend to ask is that, can you say no? So if you're speaking to a potential forced marriage victim and you ask them, can you say no, the hesitancy may make you ask further questions, because there can be so many pressures, whether it's parental pressures, financial pressures. So that's one of the biggest misconceptions and one of the ones that we always ask for them to take away with them. The other issue is obviously cultural. So like I mentioned about the media, that it is often the case where it is reported as just a South Asian issue, when actually there are cultures and different cultures in many different communities that have this issue. Like I mentioned, the Gypsy and Roma community, we've even got Jewish communities, we've got African communities, and even white communities. So it really covers all bases, but most people think that it is just a South Asian issue only. Another point to mention is that it affects men and women, and in fact, just like any domestic abuse or any abuse, men find it difficult to come forward. So although the statistics are rising year on year about how many men are suffering from forced marriage, it's still increasing. Now, that increment doesn't mean that more is happening. It just means that they are probably more likely now to come forward because they feel confident to do so. And in fact, it can be even worse for them because they might stay in the bad situation for a longer period of time. Certainly the LGBTQ community are affected as well, and the difficulties of being shamed by your family and being ousted by community is a big deal.
Yeah.
So it's those are some of the misconceptions that we always try and focus on and speak about.
No, and again, thank you for shedding light on that. And I think, you know, it's really important that we are aware of this because you gave a very good example of their arranged versus forced. They are completely different things. So I think, you know, as we're dealing with the legal community here, you know, words matter, you know, and understanding the meaning behind them and what the consequences is super important. So thank you for really giving us some sort of high level there. I want to talk more about your other accolades, because again, you deserve all the accolades that you get for your work. You were a finalist for Dana Denise Smith, who's also been a guest on our show, The Next 100 Years, for Inspirational Woman in the Law Awards in 2020. So what does it mean to you to be recognized as an inspirational woman in the legal profession, and how do you think we can encourage more diversity?
Yeah, wow. It's really lovely to be called to mention all these accolades, but I don't really, and it's really lovely for people to feel that I am an inspiration. And I never really see myself as that at all. And that's probably a cliche, isn't it? But every day I give it my all. And if these come along the way, it's really lovely. And certainly I am really passionate about diversity in the profession, of course. The profession has also a lot to answer for. I think, you know, firms need to make sure that they also encourage diversity within the profession, and not by just putting it on social media. It needs to be internally dealt with. And I've got the other issues as well. So not only do we have diversity, but I'm a female, I'm a part-time mum, and all those things together, I have realised the difficulties that come across with a career in law. And I'm quite open about it when people talk to me. But I think firms individually need to do their thing within and make sure that it is encouraged for women, for minority ethnics to progress within the firms. I think progression is a real key thing. And also, you know, when you have children and part-time working, it really is a different way of life and a difficult way of life. And there needs to be support with that as well. So I really, it's lovely to be talked about like that. And I really would like to encourage more diversity in the profession, because we need to be representative. I mean, representation is key. I often speak to clients who are from an ethnic background, and it's an automatic understanding of concerns that they might have because of their cultural identity. I understand it straight away. And I think there needs to be more representation like that, so that we can relate to people, whether it's social mobility or whether it's, you know, women or from an ethnic background. We need to have that diversity within the profession, because it's key to keeping the profession alive and relatable. That's the main thing.
Yeah, no, really well said. And we absolutely support that here on the show as well. And, you know, you're doing great work. We've had many guests in the past that are doing great work to
you know, ensure that we are making the legal profession more diverse and inclusive, and of course making people have that sense of belonging, which only has positive impacts for the firms and the professionals themselves. So finally, as we look to close, as a legal profession or with a really strong commitment to helping the community, what advice do you have for aspiring lawyers who want to make a positive impact in their careers and with charitable initiatives?
I would say that the law is really diverse. This is the beauty of law. It's amazing. I mean, corporate and commercial world is not my area, and I know that it's completely different. So there is a place for everyone. Client contact for me is one of the key things. But I really would encourage voluntary work. I think my background and probably my upbringing has made me do a lot of voluntary work. It's always about giving back. And I think all lawyers need to do that, and firms need to encourage that, lawyers do that, because if you find your passion, you will naturally progress with it. It's never easy doing law. I know that. I wasn't an A-star student, believe me. It is not easy. But if it's something that you really want to do, just work at it. Work at it. Push yourself. Find the firm that suits you, not the one that accepts you necessarily, but find the firm that also suits you, and be around positive people who support you, because that's another thing. But I have had some positive role models around me, and they have supported me no matter what. And I think that is also another key. Find your network. Don't just socialise within work, socialise outside of work. At events, you can join law society organisations, you can do voluntary work, find other people, because you never know. Networking is a hard thing to do, but it will also help your career. Maybe not straight away, but in the long term it will.
Yes, yeah, such great advice. And not just for aspiring lawyers, but all lawyers. I have a mantra myself, which I call NSN, which is never stop networking. And I think you're right. Everything is energy. The people that, you've got radiators and drains in this world. You want to be around the radiators and people that are not going to drain your energy and be that positive impact and push you and challenge you, but in from a place of wanting you to win and build your tribe. So some really, really good sound advice there, as you have throughout this episode, which I've really enjoyed, which I'm sure our listeners will to Sabina. But if they want to know more and learn more about your career or Thompson's Listers, or indeed the Sky Project and the amazing work you're doing there, where can they find out more?
So the Sky Project have a website, so www.skyproject.org.co.uk. So you can find us there with all our contact information. Thompson's, you can find me on the website. There's a picture of me. I'm hoping I'm looking approachable on that picture. I think I am. My email is on there for you to contact me. Please don't hesitate to do so if you've got you have any queries about either aspects. I'm more than happy to respond and hope I can help in any way.
Absolutely. And we'll also make sure that we share any of your website links and social media channels with this episode for you too. But thank you so, so much, Sabina. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Legally Speaking podcast. From all of us on the show, we'd like to wish you lots of continued success with your career and indeed charitable and wider pursuits. But for now, over and out. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you like the content here, why not check out our world-leading content and collaboration hub, the Legally Speaking Club, over on Discord. Go to our website, www.legallyspeakingpodcast.com, for the link to join our community there. Over and out.